Brother Minister Nuri doesn't visit enough. He is just so busy, and I think with the responsibilities that he has, not only with Mosque 74 here in Indianapolis with the Nation of Islam, but every time I'm hearing, he's all over the country talking to folk. He's on college campuses. He's at truck stops. He's everywhere, and still looks as youthful as he did the first time I met him a zillion years ago.
Thank you,
first
Brother
of all,
Andy.
You have been serving here how long now?
It's been 13 years.
Good Lord.
Now.
My
by the,
goodness.
By the grace of God and the good support of a strong believing community of Mosque 74.
And you have not aged at all. Chris, I'm jealous. He has no gray hair. None.
I take no credit for that. I'm trying to follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's How to Eat to Live program.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
All right. First of all, when we originally had you scheduled, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan was going to be here this coming Sunday. That has been postponed. Is he okay?
The minister is doing well. He had an infection that kind of took him down mid-October.
Yeah.
And recovering from that, he went to see two of his doctors, and they said green light, but his main doctor wanted to see him on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels good. His spirit is good. And the words that he used with me the other day, Brother Amos, he said, tell the people of Indianapolis that I am more excited to be there on December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Then a child would be on Christmas Eve waiting on the gift.
Oh, Lord.
Now, that's exciting.
But he's also, in a way, he's sending a message to black men, because we don't like to go to the doctor. We don't like to listen to the doctor. We like to think we're macho, that, hey, we can survive anything. So he's also sending a message, hey, if I can have the discipline.
Yes, sir.
It's teaching.
Well, that is true, and it takes someone of your wisdom and insight to see that, you know. And one of the things that we should always do when we see those in front of us that we know are great ones is try to unpack the variables and the principles they live their lives by. The minister's always promoted health. In fact, every letter that he writes to anyone, he opens up the letter the same way. May this letter find you in the best of health and spirit. If you got your health and you have the right spirit, there's nothing you can accomplish. So he's been promoting, and we have a Louis Farrakhan Foundation, Prostate Cancer Foundation, and he's been advising us for the last 15 years at the age of 35.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait till you're 40 or 45 or 50. At the age of 35, go in and get checked out to see if there's anything wrong with your prostate, because it's an epidemic.
His visit to Indianapolis now is going to be December the 1st, still at 4 o'clock, down to the convention center. Why is he coming?
In truth, Brother Amos, the minister travels all over the world. And generally, it is the words of the mouths of people that invite him to come and speak after they make an assessment on their problems and the programs inside of an environment that they want to do to fix those problems. They always see, whether it's Iran, whether it's Egypt, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Harlem, New York, or Los Angeles, California, they always see this as a man that can bring people together across the denominational lines, religious lines, ethnicity. So he's always called by the words of others to come to an environment to help people with programs solve the problems of the community. What's unique about this one is that we did not invite the minister with words. He read an article in the Indianapolis Recorder on the work that we were doing at the mosque, and he called and said that he was moved by the spirit to want to come and help Indianapolis solve some of the problems that exist and to help us continue to do what we're doing. So, you know, we're honored, to be honest, because it's one thing to invite the minister to speak with your words.
Yeah.
It's another thing to invite him with your works. And we are proud to say that it was our works that he read about that made him want to come and help Indianapolis. He's seen what we were doing with the leadership meeting at Light of the World, where we're trying to develop a black agenda. He's seen all of that. He's seen the restaurant. He's seen our school, our daycare. He's seen our effort in the community where we go out twice a week knocking on doors in every community that's hit with violence to try to stop it. So out of that work, he said, I want to come and help you all solve these problems.
Let me ask a couple things on the school.
Yes, sir.
Do you – and because the school has been going on for a number of years. It's not anything that's brand new. Did you all make the decision to be a part of the state's voucher program? Are you staying out of that?
We are all right now, only because of the general strings attached to the money. Our problem is that we have always been, and we plan on always being, a free, independent entity that answers to no one but God and to the community. Mm-hmm. So because they still have some real thin but very strong string attached to the purse that comes with the vouchers, we have not opted for it. What we do is we just charge such a small amount that anyone can afford it. And by the grace of God, we've been able to remain in existence.
From your perspective, what are the challenges facing African Americans as we end this year, as we get ready to start 2014, as I've told the community, as we start to prepare for the post-Obama era? Because at some point, when you're president of the United States, you get 8 years. When your 8 years is over with, you become a former president. And that is what's going to happen. And so all the euphoria, all the joy, everything we have felt these past years, when it gets to 2017, January the 20th, he gone. New person going to be there. And some of the same problems going to be around.
Unfortunately, when our brother became the president, we were under the illusion that a black man in the White House was going to change everything as it related to black life, which we have seen over the last 6 years that that's not the case. I would hope that after the post-Obama era that he would come back to the community and take his expertise to use that leverage to help us to connect internationally with people that he's made connections with and began to be more of a struggler on behalf of our people. We appreciate him standing up for all other people's rights, but he seems to be a little timid when it comes to standing for our rights, and we would hope that would change. Our biggest problem, Brother Amos, if I could give you three, the third would be unity. And then coming at a second place, our problem or our answer would also be unity. What you think's number one?
Unity.
So we are a people that have $1.1 trillion that we extracted out of the American economy last year. Yet we spend $23 billion a year on clothes, $11 billion a year on furniture, $3.2 billion a year keeping up with the latest cell phone, $46 billion a year on cars, $32 billion a year on getting our hair done, hair care products. But when it comes to books, we've only spent $300 million, which is an average of $7 a piece. Something's wrong with that mathematics. My people are destroyed, not from a lack of furniture or the latest iPhone, but from a lack of knowledge. So I believe that, number one, if we would unite and pool our resources, and number two, if we would acquire the requisite knowledge to keep us together, that we could solve all of our problems.
I think everybody agrees on unity, but we're in an age today, and having grown up in the back end of the civil rights era, and hearing anecdotally some of the hate that occurred then, and we see really the hate that's out here now. It's almost like, you know, yeah, we all want unity, but we're afraid of, you know, don't nobody want to be out there on point? Because if you're out there on point, I think we see what they're doing to the president. We saw what they've done to whether it was Martin, whether it was Malcolm, whether it was a number of people, even what they've done with Brother Minister over the years. And it's like, yeah, unity is fine, but somebody got to be out. Everybody's afraid to be out there on point.
Well, you know, one of the things that just an observation in study, we found that if you're reading and you come across a term or a word that you don't know the right definition from, that's a misunderstood word. If you don't stop, pick up a dictionary and look up the word, and you keep reading after you come across a word you don't know the meaning of, everything you read from that point is a blank in your mind. Well, what happens to a people that have misdefined unity? Then our struggle, our effort, our work has created a blank in our sojourn. What do I mean? Most of us have misdefined unity for uniformity, meaning that I've got to be just like you, doing the same thing in the same place at the same time. But unity is not that. Unity is you being somewhere different, doing something different at a different time, but for the one common cause.
Is it that we as a community don't want to acknowledge in I'm almost sure if Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Minister Farrakhan really published their real memoirs, that in there would be some discussion of phone conversations that have occurred, meetings in restaurants that have occurred where, and because this happened with Martin, this happened with Brother Malcolm, where it's like, okay, you go this way, I'm going that way. We'll deny that we ever sat down here and had a Coca-Cola and ate a ham sandwich or ate a hamburger. But at least you know where I'm coming from. I know where you're coming from. We know what the objective is. You do your thing. I do my thing. And hopefully we'll all together move.
That is the truth.
But you don't want. But I think the perception in the community is those kind of conversations don't exist when they really do, but we want to kind of keep those, you know, under the table.
Well, they need to happen more often. And as of late, the minister just put out an appeal to all of those who organized the 50-year anniversary of the March on Washington. Now, here's a man that had hosted and called the largest march in the history of the United States, the Million Man March, Minister Louis Farrakhan. Right. Nearly 2 million men showed up, and they didn't even invite him to the march. So he said, fine, but let's have a private meeting, and let's discuss behind closed doors and develop an agenda. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, a donkey, a elephant, these are just modes of transportation. They're not houses we're supposed to live in. So as a people, there has to be the great minds among us that sit down behind closed doors in that think tank to develop a blueprint for our salvation and how do we move forward. And then come out of that and we ride that elephant, we ride that donkey, and if we don't like the speed of the elephant,
go get another elephant.
Or the speed of the donkey. We may get another mode of transportation that's a little bit faster, but we have to have an agenda. And I would say that, you know, too, one of the things that the enemy did with us when they first brought us to America and made us slaves, there were two things that they disallowed: one, prayer, one, reading. And whenever we were allowed to read, they knew that they could say the best place to hide something from a Negro was to put it in a book. Because they had created a phobia for us reading. Why? Because every time we read a history book, we either were a slave or a revolutionary that was assassinated. So you hear, like you said earlier, people say, I don't want to be out front because that I'm going to be stabbed in the back. I've got to deal with not only the open enemy in front of me, but I have to deal with the envy and the jealousy and the backbiting. That's what I would say makes the minister so special. Is because in the midst of envy, jealousy, CIA, ATF, Homeland Security, FBI, the Jewish lobbies, the synagogue of Satan, ADL, B'nai B'rith, the United States government. In the midst of all of that, he's never stopped.
All them boys,
he's never stopped moving, and he's never stopped loving. So I would hope that, you know, on December 1st, that we would all come to the convention center to, if nothing else, we know we're going to get some wisdom. We know we're going to get some jewels and nuggets, but we want to say thank you to Minister Farrakhan for standing for us for 58 years now.
I got to ask you, people that already have the tickets that say November 12th.
10th, yep, November 10th.
The 10th, what'd they do with them?
That they should take that ticket out right on the back December 1st.
Hold on. Just hold on to the ticket.
And bring it with them.
Hold on to the ticket.
Bring it
with
them.
Don't throw it away.
And there's a text message number on the front.
Mm-hmm.
It's 69302.
If you're texting Unity to 69302.
Text Unity to 69302. Even if you don't have a ticket, text it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what we will do is put you in a system where you'll have up-to-date information, and we will guarantee that you have a seat. We're expecting 5,000 to 10,000 people at the convention center. That's about how many people have said they're going to come. We have over 7,000 tickets in circulation in the hands of people as we speak, with 3 more weeks to go. We keep on pushing.
You may have questions for Minister Nuri of the Nation of Islam, Mosque 74, 239-1310. 239-1310. Afternoon's name is Will. Take a break. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about homeless families.
Mm-hmm.
Because we may ask Minister when we come back, because the problem of homeless families is increasing, and we have no system in place to provide aid for those folks. Is when the shelters are full, like Bethlehem, you out to lunch, and we ain't got no. There's no mangers around here that I know of.
Yes.
Anyway, it's Afternoons with Amos after these. Nation of Islam's on the web. Y'all got, that's a nice website.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
I told him during the break, it looked a little bit like the healthcare.gov, only it works better, which is a good thing. 239-1310, 239-1310 with Minister Nuri of the Nation of Islam, Mosque 74, here in Indianapolis. There was a point, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was a point where nation mosques and members of the nation went out in the community doing the types of things that people now equate with the 10-point coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Does the nation still do that kind of ministry in other cities?
We still
do that here.
We do it here at least twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
At least twice a week. There, we take a battalion of men into the streets. We just don't ask for anybody to bring a camera to record us, because we're not doing it for vanity's sake. But we are in the trenches, if you will, pretty much every day, but a large battalion that we go out at least a couple of times a week. And we normally cover two, three square miles, knocking on doors, talking to the citizens of each neighborhood, finding out what we can do to help make their environment better.
What are they telling you?
Well, of course, the biggest thing for our people in the trenches or in the hood is that they cry about money.
Mm-hmm.
They need more money. So what we try to do, we try to offer them, you know, there's a saying that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. So we've opened up our mosque not just to provide jobs, but as an employment center, where there we have several products that people can purchase wholesale.
Right.
If they want to work, then we have it available. And we have brothers in particular and a few sisters that have been taking some of the products that we offer wholesale, and they've been in the streets marketing them retail, and they've been providing food, clothing, and shelter for themselves and their families.
In the history of the mosque here, there have been occasional run-ins with the mayors of the day, Republican or Democrat.
Yes, sir.
About exercising your First Amendment rights on street corners.
Yes, sir.
Where does that stand? Is it, 'cause it's almost like we have an ordinance, we have rules that were worked out in collaboration with the nation back in the day, and it's almost like the police aren't enforcing those like they used to. What is the street situation right now?
Well, they have in, for lack of better words, they have reinitiated their sanctioning.
They done geared back up.
Ever since the mayor put out about dealing with the panhandlers downtown and those panhandlers that are begging at the exits of highways.
Which are mostly white.
Yes. Allegedly, that's who they were after. But somehow, some way, every time that anything street-related and human being on a street corner comes up, even though it's supposed to be panhandlers downtown or on the exit of the highway, we are the ones that suffer the sanctions and the attacks or the discrimination. So we've been catching hell, you know, on the street corners, to be honest with you, from the police that have been writing tickets and making threats. And, of course, you know, this is something that creates our main form of outreach has never been a street corner. It's always been door to door in our community. Right. However, while we are out there is because many black men that joined the Nation of Islam came from a life of crime, wherein they come to the nation, but they have a felony. Come to the nation, felony, but they have 2, 3, 4 children.
Right.
Felony, nation, 2, 3, 4 children. We teach that a man should take care of his children. Well, if a man with a felony is to take care of his children and he can't get a gainful employment in society, then we offer him an opportunity to make money for himself. So that is what the brothers are out there doing. Number one, they're out there propagating a message that we believe can change the lives of our people. Number two, they carry a few products with them so that they can provide for those sons and daughters that they've brought into the world to be good, responsible men. So we have been catching hell on the corners lately.
Because usually when I see you all, you all are following what I understood was the agreement, following the ordinance on the sidewalks, not the median in the middle of the street, and not going into the lanes of traffic. Is this this them other folk, and members of the nation? Y'all don't look bedraggled. Y'all look like brand new money. You always have. The other folks that are standing, the folks in here are laughing, but they know I speak truth. The other ones look like who'd have thought it? And any intelligent person, I take that back, any unintelligent person would know that them people, mostly on the corners, are not members of the nation. You can tell the difference.
Well, that is the truth. But however,
but
you
y'all
know,
have not raised this as a public concern. That's why I'm asking, because it's been, we're talking about unity, we're talking about not holding things back, and I think sometimes when you don't hear anything, you figure it's not a problem.
Well, we intend to fight it to the best of our ability.
You talk to chief?
Yes, sir, I have.
You talked to the public safety director?
I haven't talked to the safety director, but I talked to Chief Height about it recently. And the way the ordinance is written, they have the right to do whatever they want to do to you. If you're standing on the bus stop trying to catch a bus, you are in violation of the ordinance. You cannot casually jog, walk down the street, catch a bus, scratch your head, tie your shoe. You can't do anything that would distract the view of a driver and not be found in violation of the ordinance. So our fight has always been, you know, how many people do you see jaywalking that you don't pull over or that you don't give a ticket? How many people have you seen without a seatbelt that you decided not to give a ticket? How is it that we're doing something really that is a proactive force? We are not waiting till somebody does wrong to respond. We are trying to keep them from doing wrong in the first place, and that is what we do on the corners. How is it that we are not afforded that same, if you will, leniency for what we do?
I'm going to take a call, and I also want to ask about the ministry that you all do with ex-offenders and whether you guys are working to try to, you know, get those that qualify for the new expungement law, get that worked out. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm enjoying listening to the program today, and I just want to let him know that I did not know that you used the proceeds from the items that you sold for what you just stated. And I know I have been one who have driven by and not helped out. But I tell you, from this day forward, I will be helping out.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Sister Anonymous. We appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Appreciate the call. Let me go to Kevin at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing?
Fine. You're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I was just calling to embrace the greatness of the nation. Give the brother greetings and peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, sir. We're just calling to give you a great intention, great good job, and also to let the people know that some of the greatest supporters of the Nation of Islam are outside of the nation, and majority of a lot of organizations that are out here today have their greatest supporters outside of their homes. So we have to embrace those who are outside and inside, and we have to be aware of how we treat our strangers.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. The new expungement law that covers just about every offense except the most heinous. Have you all been looking at that law and figuring out ways that if it can benefit the members of the Nation of Islam and people that you work with, trying to, you know, help them through that process?
Of course we have. But, you know, the biggest thing that always has bothered me and anyone of consciousness is that we call this a Judeo-Christian society. Mm-hmm. And the principle that undergirds the faith of Christianity is redemption and forgiveness. I've never understood how, if you tell somebody before they do wrong, if you do the crime, you do the time. Mm-hmm. And then tell them while they're doing the time that you are doing this time in prison to pay your debt back mm-hmm. to society. How is it that I did the crime, I'm doing the time, and I paid my debt back to society? Why am I still paying for it for the rest of my life in a country that's supposed to be rooted in forgiveness, redemption, and I've paid society's debt back? So we've never agreed that a person's past mistakes should be held against them after they have proven themselves to be different. So saying that to say, mm-hmm. we don't spend a whole lot of time channeling our energy to try to get the records of our brothers expunged as much as we do. Mm-hmm. Spend time trying to show them that you have the same mental power as Bill Gates, as Steve Jobs, or as anybody that you've ever seen, if you're willing to plan your work and work your plan. You don't have to clock in anywhere. You can, in fact, do yourself. Yeah, do for yourself. So we never have encouraged people with clean or dirty records to necessarily put an application in, send their resume off. We encourage people to do for yourself. And you have the ability to work and create your own economy with no ceiling on it at all. So we're in that business of creating owners, not employees, employers, not workers.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question for
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you said that you deal with people with felonies. How does your, I don't know if you call it religion or what, but how do you look upon people that are child molesters? And they try to come into your community? How do you deal with that?
That's a great question. That's a very good question. Well, of course, again, there if in a Muslim country a person is found guilty of raping a woman or molesting a child, then that punishment is death. However, we don't live in a Muslim country, and we have not been raised in that high degree of righteousness that many of the Eastern countries are. So when someone comes and they have that record, we accept them and do all we can to help to provide them a course of redemption. This does not mean that we are turn a blind eye to that history and put them in a position or put our children in a position where they could have a re-stimulation of whatever problem they had in the past and do something again that would offend a child like that. So we accept them as you are, no matter what you've done. But the law in our society is come as you are, but you cannot stay as you are. And we have a system set up where if anyone is found in violation of any of the laws of God, then there's a system of discipline, and they will be outed from our society for a certain amount of time. And if they continue to repeat an offense, even if it's as small as gossiping, then at a certain point, we shut you out of our community.
Okay. Well, with that being said, can I please leave my information for you so you can give me a call back?
Yes, ma'am. I think so. Chris, be available. He'll write it down, and I'll give you a call.
Thank you very much.
All right, so hold on, and Chris will get that information off the air that allow me to talk to Mike at 239-1310. Hi there.
Amos?
Yes?
Appreciate you, brother, as usual.
Thank you.
This expungement thing hits to my core, as you already know.
Right.
I have Class B felonies. I acquired those felonies in 1997. I served my 3 years, and as the great man just said, I'm still doing that time.
Mm-hmm.
46 years old with a felony that's 17 years old, and actually I'm out here working with my nephew because I can't go to FedEx, and I can't go here, and I can't drive trucks, and I can't do that, and I think that's the biggest shame. You brought up that J.O., the Christian society that we live in, and it's just a myth, I guess. I need and I want something to be done about it because it is just really incredibly hard to have done your time and then have to face that box on an application, which I just did the other day at Harry's and Izzy's, and I went ahead and did it, mm-hmm. and I made a comment. My felony's 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's move on. You know what I mean?
See, this is an issue.
It is an issue.
This is Brother Mike. 17 years later, he's a completely different being than what he was. And you know, one of the things that I try to suggest to people that are in a state of hopelessness and despair is that if God takes souls by night and you woke up this morning, that means he still believes in you. So you have the right and obligation to believe in yourself. I just would suggest something to Brother Mike, if I could.
Mike, are you still there?
If he's listening, Mike,
are you there? I think I heard a click that we may have lost him again.
The profession that will survive. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that there is a profession that will survive the fall of any government or any economy, and that is the craft or profession or skill of being a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
If you, Brother Mike, would do something, find a product that you believe in, and find a way to get it wholesale and sell it retail and work as hard for yourself as you would work had you been at FedEx or UPS, because they're going to make sure you work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Work that hard, that long for yourself and become a salesman, then don't worry about what government, city, state says about your felony. You know what God thinks about you. He woke you up and you go to work for yourself selling your own products.
I have always thought, and I appreciate the Honorable Louis Farrakhan in his position, self-help, because that goes back to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and goes back to the origins of the Nation of Islam. But I think in this society, one of the failings that the broad leadership of the African-American community on a national basis is leadership really has not taken businesses to task on that issue. Well, and the reason I say that is Martha Stewart, who's, mm-hmm, again, she's an entrepreneur.
Right.
Convicted felon. But because she's an entrepreneur, okay, she can come back to Indianapolis and go to Long's Bakery and everybody seems so happy. But wait a minute, you ain't convicted felon. You got a record, girlfriend. The comedian Tim Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Drug dealer. Cocaine dealer. Right. Went to prison. Works for Disney. You can't get more family friendly hanging around kids than working for Mickey Mouse and them.
Right.
It would almost be like Louis Farrakhan and Al Sharpton and everybody needs just to call these companies out hey, if Mike comes and applies to you for a job and he's paying his society after 17 years, what is the reason? Because we all know a lot of it occurred after 9/11, mm-hmm. when everybody went to background checks, trying to make sure that the boogeyman wasn't, you know, going to go in there and harm our people. We get that. We understand that. But at that point, that these people went hog wild and forgot the teachings they learned in Sunday school. They forgot the sermons they yeah. learned in church. But we as a community, in my view, we have never hit corporate America over the head about that. Your part is right in terms of self-help. I don't argue that, but not everybody is built to do that.
Well, that is, one of the things that we see looking back in history, when we study Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street,
right.
when we study, what is the other one? I can't think of the name right now. But let's just
look
at Tulsa.
Somebody call a reminder.
But look at Tulsa, Oklahoma,
yeah.
Black Wall Street. Look at how many businesses that they had. Do you know why they had their own cab company, their own hotels, their own dry cleaners, banks? Because we couldn't eat at their restaurant. We couldn't go to their cleaners or put money in their bank. It's something about what you said earlier about the conditions that cause unity to take place. We have a saying in the nation, the best come from the word, and the rest will come from a whooping. I think that we need those kind of winds to be on us so that we can build us a Tulsa, Oklahoma, Wall Street again.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Minister Nuri, the Nation of Islam Mosque 74. Tomorrow we'll talk about the problems of homeless, particularly homeless families. Also, Debbie Knox from Wish TV Channel 8, who's retiring at the end of this month. She'll be with us live. We'll also have folks from the Sierra Club talking about coal, because you know coal will hurt you. Because it gets in your lungs and it's not healthy, and that ain't cool either. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. Let me go to Michelle right quick with Minister Nuri. Michelle, you got about a minute.
Hi, Amos. How you doing?
Fine.
And hi to your guests. The question I have is, how did you go about reserving a seat to hear Minister Farrakhan?
Beautiful. It's December 1st, and what you do is text 69302. And
69302.
Yep, text UNITY to 69302, and we'll get you a ticket. Or just come up to the mosque, and we have it right there on 38th in Baltimore at our restaurant. You can get your ticket, and if that doesn't work and you need somebody to bring it to you, you can call us at 855-244-4406. And
you said 855-244-4406,
and we'll get your ticket to you.
2406. 2406. Okay.
All right, my sister. We look forward to seeing you.
All right. Thank you. Let me go quickly to Anonymous. Anonymous, you got about a minute.
Hey, I just had a question about some of the things you guys are talking about. And I don't know, how do we tell a company how to set their standards about how they're going to hire, who they're going to hire? You know, I struggled for years with not being able to get a job because of the lack of education I had. And that was just the company standard, so I had to go back and get the education. But if they say you got to have a high school diploma or a college degree or no felons, those jobs have always been reserved for people who stay clean. That's kind of a deterrent. But if a person makes a mistake, they got to understand they have to live with that mistake. But if we say that we're going to give felons opportunities as non-felons, then what's going to keep a 14, 15-year-old kid from committing a felon when he knows it's not going to hurt him in the future? There would be so many more kids committing crimes if they know that there's no consequences to that. How do we tell companies who to hire and who not to hire? We can't do that.
So you would rather that you make a mistake, you pay for it the rest of your life.
It's
you
a get choice, a li- not a mistake. It's a choice to commit a felon. A mistake is running a red light if you're looking down and you drop something on the floor. I mean, that's a choice.
Well, unfortunately, if you were to look at the statistics, just pull up the record on how many people since DNA testing has come out that were on death row have been found innocent after serving 20, 30 years of incarceration. Everybody that, if everybody, the scripture says this, that if God was to judge man for his sins, there would be no soul left alive on earth. And I'm guaranteeing all of us have done something that could have landed us in prison and possibly could have been charged with a felony. And if you do the crime, you do the time, pay your price, and then you should be free from that burden.
And I don't know if the caller is still there, but is the caller advocating that an employer should deny? Hold it. You're also advocating. We've had people who've been denied employment because of an arrest. They were found innocent of the arrest, but the employer denies it on the arrest. Is
but
that
that's
fair?
The standards for a company. We can't tell them
on an arrest. Wait. Hold it. Hold it. On an arrest where the charges were dropped or you were found not guilty?
That's up to a lawyer.
Hold it. If you get arrested and you go to trial and the jurors say not guilty, you went and applied for a job and they turned you down because you of that arrest, you would be calling this show talking about an injustice. You know it in your heart you would.
Felons are when you commit a felony.
I'm not talking about a felon. He's so hung up on felony, and obviously he missed a part of the New Testament about forgiveness. Because if Jesus were here, that ain't how Jesus would talk. And I think if Minister Farrakhan was here, that's not how he would talk. December the 1st, 4 o'clock, doors open at 2 at the convention center. Everybody knows where that is.
Yes, sir.
Live and in living color.
Live and in person.
Minister Louis Farrakhan, who still looks like he's 30 years old.
That's right. That's right.
Because Minister Nuri looked like he's 21.
Man,
always good to see you.
It's my honor and privilege. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to our future.
All right, look forward as well.